Good morning.
Hey, how are you doing today?
I'm doing pretty good.
Good. Good to hear. So I've introduced what you're about already a little bit today. So I wonder if you want to just begin and start talking about what's going on right now with the struggle to protect Squaquaquelt against Sun Peaks.
Okay, anyway, my name's Arnie Jack. I'm a part of the Shuswap Nation, what you call the Shuswap Nation out here in British Columbia in the English linguistic sense. The traditional name that we call ourselves is the Squem, and we're located within central British Columbia. We, according to a lot of people that have, depending on who you talk to, we constitute approximately 18% of the province here in British Columbia. So we're one of the more larger nations territorial-wise as opposed to population-wise. Right now there are probably about 8,000 members within our nation that are spread out over a number of, established communities that, have a route going back to Confederation, where they unilaterally imposed the reservation system on our people out here in British Columbia with the illegal Indian Act system, and therein was created 17 Indian Acts, what were called reservations today, no better than, in the Wolverine's words, what people call concentration camps, modern-day concentration camps. And on a note there, it should be noted that the concentration camps were actually studied by the Germans. They were modeled after the reservation system in their belief on how to herd sheep around like cattle. And I think that that's kind of the mentality of the people today that are involved in a lot of these actions that are striking down, attempting to dismember and shut down any person or group who want to address the legal land question here in British Columbia. And that's kind of where I'm coming from. And now when we talk about the traditional territory, we're talking about a really large area here, and we're talking about a lot of economics. And I think that's what a lot of people should really understand, that when I talk to you from British Columbia, I'm talking about two things here in Canada, in existing Canada today. When we're talking about people sitting in Toronto or Ottawa or Montreal or any one of those eastern communities, we're talking about what it means to be on the land out here, and we need to have these serious issues addressed by eastern Canada, I think. There was a reference to, when we emailed each other, there was a reference to the fact that it sounded like when I was in Montreal that I was attempting to have people come on board and address these issues, and that's exactly the mentality that needs to be adopted by Eastern Canada at this point, where 70% of God-fearing Catholics, 70% of the population in Canada is estimated by demographics to be God-fearing Christians, yet when we ask for the rule of law to be addressed, those 70% of God-fearing Christians need to begin to understand the position that we take and allow the truth to come through, that the law needs to be addressed and respected, not only here in British Columbia, but right across the board of Indian nations as well, people who have been legally, and I'm only talking legally in an international context now. Everyone sees the CNN about the George Bush and the Patriot Act and all of these other instruments of policy, all of these other policies within an international context are supposed to hold water. And I think that when we talk about Canada being in an international context, their constitution needs to hold some kind of water. And at this point, it isn't doing that because they're collectively and systematically stopping, physically stopping our people from exercising our rights to the land here in British Columbia. And on numerous occasions, they've used the Royal Canadian Mounted Police as scapegoats as well as buffer zones for them, between them and the truth. And I think that's kind of where the political landscape here is in British Columbia today, when you really brush away the layers of rhetoric that come with Indian Act chiefs and politicians that are outside of the native realm, where they're continuously aspiring to address our rights, but in the meantime, the housing and the despair within the reservation system, the concentration camp system, continues to exist at this point. So that's kind of where we're at, and I'd like to start there. Mm-hmm. And maybe if you have any questions at this point, Matt, I could probably address that.
Mm-hmm. Well, considering, like, I was thinking about the previously, like, more overt tactics like residential schools and head taxes and all that kind of stuff. You know, like, they're not employed to the same extent as they are now, but things are beginning to be a bit more hidden in some ways from the general public. I wonder if you can talk about some legal tools that are being used against Indigenous peoples in Canada to further the process of displacement and assimilation.
I think that'd be a really good place to dwell on today, the legal aspect of everything that we're talking about, mm-hmm. because when we talk about it in an international context, Canada always tries to give that perception that they're a legally just country, that they're the best country in the world to live in. The United States might have the reputation of the land of the free and the home of the brave, but Canada tries to project the perception that we're the best country in the world to live in. And when they don't uphold their own laws and they continue to squash our native people as well, and let's get one thing straight here. It's not only Native people that are being subjected to this military and police state right now. Mm-hmm. You can see this in all aspects of Canadian society, where the question of the rule of law, when there's an attempt for it to be addressed, such as, you know, the nepotism and the corruption of the non-Native politicians at this point, when you try and address that in any context, you're immediately criticized and called down. There have been a number of whistleblowers who have actually fed the Indigenous people with a lot of knowledge who can interpret in a non-Native context exactly how these politicians and a lot of other lawyers, judges, the police are actually using the rule of law against us, and they're not in their own judge-made law. And that's the difference, where what we talk about is constitutional law, which derives from natural law, international law. That's the basis of our argument right now. We're not talking about provincial law. We're not talking about municipal law. What we talk about is the constitutional law of this country. Section 35(1) is the most basic form of law that needs to be upheld today, where we interpret what we decide as our own people. This has been well affirmed. This has been very well affirmed at an international level, the right of self-determination to a people. And I think that when Canada, the state of Canada, through the politicians, the judges, the police, the courts, and the media, when they have perpetuated that lie against us, we need to stand up and we need to say that this law needs to be addressed, and this is what we're doing at this level, at a constitutional level at this point. And right now, we've had a number of constitutional developments that have taken place within the last couple of years, what we call contemporary history in this country. This is not just our own native oral version of history. Now we're talking about constitutional law and the developments of that law within this country, where on December 11th, by your own admissions, by your own Supreme Kangaroo Court of Canada, the admissions that came down was that in British Columbia, Aboriginal title has never been extinguished, and yet we still have the provincial government citing their provincial law under the terms of Confederation with absolutely no regard for international or constitutional remedy. Now, when we talk about it at this level, of course we're talking about something that is over and above the regular Canadian citizen. But at the same time, there also needs to be an addressal by the Canadian system that says we want our system, we want our Canadian state system to address the rule of law as according to the Aboriginal nations here. And in our specific case, we'd be specifically speaking of British Columbia, where by international treaty, international law, two instruments right there, I speak of international treaties and international law, two very closely related instruments that need to be adhered to in this. What I'm talking about in this case, I'm specifically speaking of the Tsleil-Waututh Nation in British Columbia, where I'm a part of, where I've lived my life, where I was born and raised. And when we talk about the constitutional law here, we say that we would like to have an outright constitutional jurisdiction adjudication of the issue, and that can only come through third-party adjudication, such as what was echoed in 1995 with the rule of law that was position that was taken in Gustavson Lake when they finally went no further with the rule of law, and they said, let's shoot it out with the Indians, and that's exactly what they proceeded to do, and they criminalized our people, and they moved into place, and they orchestrated a kill. They discharged in excess of 77,000 rounds at my people that day. Canada declared war on the Shuswap Nation that day, and to this day, that war is still dominant here in within the Central Territories of British Columbia, what is known as British Columbia. We've never abandoned that position. There's a number of different people here within our territory that say that in 1995, the position that the Wolverine took, the position that he took, is still relevant today. Those international instruments of those unrepealed statutes of constitutional law, those internationally binding treaties, they've never been adhered to this day. They've never been addressed. And there have been a number of different occasions where we've had a number of, even of our own mediocre politicians go in the public limelight and state that there needs to be some change in the fundamental way that Canada deals with us through the provincial government of British Columbia. And I think that the law is very relevant in that, because when we talk about the law, there's already a couple of different remedies that are at play right now. And there is the first one that I mentioned, which is the 1704 Queen Anne's Court, the Mohicans versus Connecticut, where there was a ruling. A document that was issued by the Crown at that point, which today still remains to be an internationally binding statute of international law, because this is deemed as a statute of constitutional law within the British monarchy. And to this day, when the British monarchy has internationally binding statutes of law that are placed before them, they adhere to them. And in this case, we're asking for the Queen's duty to administer a court of international convene, to administer the setting up of this court in an international arena, and have nothing to do with the adjudication process of this course, but only simply providing that venue. Hey, I'll tell you right now, I think that we could take it in Buckingham Palace. We could take this international about here. We're talking about it, making a decision once and for all. Who owns Central British Columbia? Is it the Tsleil-Waututh Nation who under internationally binding law have never ceded, surrendered, or sold this land? There is no point in our history where you can actually definitively point to a place where our ancestors have said, okay, here, we sell you this land for 73 beads and 19 trinkets. That has never happened. Manhattan has never been addressed in British Columbia. They've never beaten us. You talk about enslaving the Navajos. You talk about the long walk that they endured. And the only way that they could be released from Fort Sumner was to give up and relinquish a lot of their land and promise to live on the reservation. We never did that. We don't have nation within a nation status here in British Columbia willingly right now. It's been imposed upon us forcefully through the RCMP, through the Indian agents that work for the residential school and the Catholic Church at that point, when there was contact back here in 1800. When we talk about the law, we say that we want the law addressed, and when we talk about contemporary Native politics here today, and specifically maybe, okay, what have you been involved in, Arnie? And I can say that a year ago we stood on the mountain
under the direction of our elders, who stated that we were only instruments of their policy. This was the policy of our elders, our old people, our seers. These are the people who said that there needs to be a stand taken for the land by the people, by the young people. And we went willingly up the mountain, and we proceeded to stand on the mountain and say, this is our land. We want the law addressed. We want the international law addressed. We want the constitutional law addressed. And more importantly, dominating everything, the natural law needs to be addressed here as well, in terms of the destruction of our homelands, as according to the Sun Peaks whole fiasco at this point, where we see a desecration of our lands and the unwillingness of any form of policing agency, you might call them, any form of righteous people step forward and say there needs to be some kind of adjudication process in this land question. And I think that if we have to listen to the people that are standing on the ground, then what are they saying? And what I was saying a year ago that has never changed from Gustafson Lake, the people in Gustafson Lake, the Wolverine, the elders that stood with him, the young people, they asked for the British Columbia Lands Act to be addressed. They asked for a validity decision as it pertains to the British Columbia Lands Act at this point, because in 1875, January 23rd, the British Columbia Lands Act was deemed patently unconstitutional by the federal government of Canada, the Minister of Justice, the Deputy Minister of Justice, the Privy Council. They all deemed the British Columbia Lands Act patently unconstitutional because there were no treaties signed with the indigenous nations in British Columbia. And they signed it. And they signed off on that one document that sums up the legality of the province of British Columbia, the whole notion of that governmental structure within our territory and its imposed jurisdiction on us, and stated that the British Columbia Lands Act is patently unconstitutional. Patently. That's a legal word that legal scholars adhere to. They bow down to that word, patently unconstitutional. When you have something that's patently unconstitutional, you deal with it. And in this case, there's been a continuous addressal by the Canadian government, the provincial government, our Indian Act elected chiefs here in British Columbia, all 200 of them, to respect the rule of law. And that's what we do when we stand on the land. We ask for the law to be addressed. And in Gustafson Lake, the provincial government and the federal government and the Royal Canadian Mounted Police discharged in excess of 77,000 rounds at those people, at my people, in approximately 4 acres in an hour and a half. And they ripped those trees to shreds. And they call that justice?